And welcome to part one of the rise and fall of the Southeastern Conference, presented by the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pomp, co-host Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, you've missed our other sponsor, which is another mattress company that sends you mattresses in a box.
Seamless. No, that's a delivery app.
Do you hate the fucking post office?
I'm pretty excited about this week's show. We got some special.
Yeah, we're trying out a new format for some off-season podcasts where we try to learn you something
and learn ourselves through deep research.
Sure. And,
today we're going to talk part one of a part three series on the SEC. And we're going to kind of give you like a preamble, if you will, to maybe the beginning.
Well, Red Dead Redemption. This is a prologue.
Yeah.
We're out in the icy Coulter.
Yeah. And then like really going to kick off at the start of the championship game. That's kind of like when the whole, the SEC is a thing.
Yes.
Gonna happen. So let's get into it, Dan. So in the beginning.
In the beginning, before the light, there was nothing but the faceless form, whatever that is from Genesis. I think it's important to let people know a thing that you would probably never know if you've been following college football the last 15 years, is that the SEC was by far like the lowest conference on the totem pole other than the ACC. Like, those were the absolute two lowest conferences on the totem pole. And just to set the stage, because we'll be talking about a lot of different things in this episode, let's put your brain back to what college football was from, 1940 until, basically the end of World War II up until 1992, basically.
Yeah.
You had a couple of different conferences, and then you had a ton of independents. Basically all of the teams based in the Northeast were independent. There was no one conference up in the Northeast. And that was for a pretty basic reason, is that a lot of colleges in the Northeast are private and those schools didn't have football. So you would be independent for football, you know, if you're Pitt or Penn State or, you know, Notre Dame, and then you'd be in a league with a bunch of small Catholic colleges for baseball and basketball. But basically, you had the Northeast Independents, you had the Big Ten, you had the Big Eight, which was Nebraska, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Iowa State, and Colorado. You had the Southwest Conference, which was all Texas schools plus Arkansas. And then you had the Pac-8, and then eventually the Pac-10 when the Arizona schools joined. And then you had the ACC and the SEC. And those were your major conferences.
Well, and the WAC.
The WAC came later. But okay. There was no Sun Belt. There was no Conference USA. You had the schools that would eventually be in the American or Conference USA were independents. You had a lot of Southern independents. And if you were a Southern independent, it basically meant you let black people play before the major two conferences in the South did. And they wouldn't let you play with them because you broke the unspoken rules.
Why wasn't? Clearly all the players did come from the South, kind of back then almost. A lot of the good players did, at least. If you look through, a lot of historically black colleges have more Hall of Famers than the bigger schools in their state, still to this day.
Yeah.
South Carolina State has more Hall of Famers than Clemson or South Carolina combined.
Yeah.
So part of why the SEC was so down was because they were segregated. And a lot of these black people were like, well, I can't really go play there. I don't really want to stay in the South where I have no rights, really. I can get killed for looking at a white lady. I'm going to go up north. It's a little more friendly to my cause.
Yeah, and so basically you look at, you know, there have been some demographic changes in America over the last 70 years where, Nebraska has a lot fewer people in it now than it did in 1950. Yeah. You know, because
Florida expanded.
Florida is, 10 times the size it was in 1950. But there's other things where it's just, programs like Nebraska and Oklahoma and Pitt and Penn State and Notre Dame, part of what they relied on to become these major athletic programs, Michigan, that's another one that pops to mind, Ohio State, is that you had all these black people in the South who didn't want to go to an ACC or an SEC school. And if you wanted to play major college football, Syracuse, Jim Brown, the greatest running back of all time, went to Syracuse. It was because that was the place he could go and play major college football and actually be allowed to be on campus. So you had this like constant exodus of great talent out of the places where, you know, most African Americans lived into places where they would be allowed to play football. So yeah, you ended up with like, here's your choice, great black player who wants to play football in the NFL maybe someday. Go to Syracuse or go to Mississippi Valley State. And that was the choice you had. And obviously, if you went to Mississippi Valley State, you wouldn't be on TV a lot. And if you went to Syracuse, you'd have to be cold. So that was, you know, that was the choice all these kids were making. Because the SEC was like, nah, we don't do that here. And the ACC also made the same decisions. So, you know, those conferences, as a result, talked a lot of shit in the 40s and 50s about how great they were. But, you know, as the 60s came to an end and other teams started having black players, we found out the SEC wasn't really as good as it thought it was. When, you know,
yeah,
when they had to play integrated teams, they didn't do so well.
Yeah. And then was it 1967? Is it Kentucky or Ole Miss that has the first black player in the SEC?
It was definitely not Ole Miss. It was definitely not Ole Miss.
I believe it was Kentucky then. But you have that, and then famously, though, I think who embraced integration all the way in 1971, Bear Bryant. And look who had a ton of success after that.
Yeah, the one guy who said Alabama, nothing more than winning.
Yeah, and he said, Alabama, if you're a young black kid in Alabama, come here. We don't hate you that much if you can play football.
Fletcher Page was the first African-American football player in the history of the SEC, and he went to the University of Kentucky.
There you go. So yeah, Kentucky integrates. But Bama, you'll hear a lot of stories how Bear Bryant's kind of known as one of the pioneers of integration in the SEC, if you will. Yeah. And much as he could be a pioneer.
And a lot of that was just having to play in the Sugar Bowl every year and having to play either like Notre Dame or a team from the Southwest. Well, no, they played in the Cotton Bowl. But having to play like a team from either up north, because a lot of the northern teams would play in New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl, and it was like, Jesus, I'm losing to like Tony Dorsett, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to just get my brains kicked in by these black kids from up north.
So I think early on, Alabama, I mean, they had success before that, obviously, but a lot of success in the Bryant era, like the Bear Bryant wishbone kind of era, I think kind of goes back to him bands. Being kind of supportive of integration, if you will.
Yeah.
And the forefront. And that's just kind of lay the groundwork for why Alabama is a big deal in the national eye. Because Alabama goes from this weird all-white kind of southern thing to like, oh boy, these boys can kick everybody's ass.
Yeah, Bear Bryant wins more national championships than practically every coach of his era. I mean, they build a pretty dominant football program, and nationally, as far as the national media is concerned, Alabama is Southern football.
Yeah.
Like that is what, you know, when you start talking about football in the South, it's Alabama and
no, and that's kind of what cements Alabama up there with Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame.
Yes.
In the national media's eyes. Right. In USC. So you get to that. And then we get when we get SEC formations, formated before that, we get to expansion when, Dan?
So expansion starts happening as a result of the landmark Supreme Court case where the NCAA was sued by a series of colleges led by Notre Dame and Oklahoma. What you have to understand about how television worked with college football is the NCAA decided who was on television. The NCAA negotiated TV contracts with the networks, and it was NCAA Game of the Week. And the NCAA chose who went in that game. which, and you know, you would be on like a local affiliate for like, if you lived in an area where North Carolina, like let's say UNC is really popular, you would maybe get the UNC game and then the national game of the week would be on at like 4 o'clock and that's the game everybody would see nationally.
Yeah. Well, even think about this today. I heard this fact recently. During Bo Jackson's freshman year at Auburn, if you didn't live directly in Auburn, basically, I believe, you didn't see Auburn on TV until the end of October.
Right, which is an amazing thing. And the number one punishment the NCAA used to do back then was TV bans.
Yeah.
So if you got in trouble, if they caught you paying players or whatever, they would just ban you off television, which means like some of the greatest teams in the history of college football, because they were on a TV ban, nobody ever saw them. Like, yeah. The Houston Cougars run and shoot team that, you know, broke every offensive record in the history of college football. Nobody saw them on television because they were on a TV ban. And it's damn near impossible to find any of their games.
Yeah.
So, the NCAA was sued by the school saying, well, no, you don't actually have a right to do that. We actually own the rights to what, to how our teams perform on television. They went to the Supreme Court and they won. And mm-hmm. that, from that moment on, that changed the game. Because when the schools own their rights, own their own TV rights, you start seeing, okay, this is going to change everything. One, it immediately killed the Southwest Conference. Because the Southwest Conference was 8 schools in Texas plus Arkansas. That means what television network would ever pay to get the Southwest Conference? It's all the same TV markets. Like, you've got like, okay, yeah, we'll lock down the Dallas and the Houston TV network, TV market and San Antonio. That's it. Like, that's all we got.
Yeah.
You know, and so the Southwest Conference was doomed from the moment that court case came down. Arkansas immediately started looking for somewhere else to go and they eventually ended up in the SEC. And then Texas A&M, Baylor, and Texas Tech ended up joining the Big 8 and forming the Big 12 because they had to get into a league where they'd be in other TV markets so they could sell the you know, they could better sell their rights. All of the independents started coming together and saying, well, we need to form conferences because, okay, how many people are going to pay to see Louisville football? How many people are going to pay money to see South Carolina football?
Yeah. Versus these schools quickly realized we got to kind of stick together.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a lesson that's kind of foreshadowing for what the SEC will learn it has to do.
It basically creates a situation where it's way smarter for you to be in a group of schools who are pooling themselves together and making a pitch to TV networks than to be split up and trying to negotiate individual deals.
Yeah, so the only school that worked out for
is Notre Dame.
Yeah. BYU tried it recently and failed, and they have pretty big global reach.
Yeah, I mean they're literally built behind a religion, and they can't make it work. So
yeah, and they have their own satellite.
Their own TV network. Like they literally have a TV network, and even then,
yeah, it's and not that most working. People probably get if they pay for like premium cable or DirecTV.
I think even if you've got like anything above standard, you've got BYU TV.
And check that out. Sometimes they play like an old BYU game on there. It's pretty sweet.
Their website is sweet as hell. They've got all kinds of games on their website. Mm-hmm. But everyone starts. You get the great consolidation of the early 90s, where Penn State ends up in the Big Ten. The Big East Football Conference forms and doesn't have Penn State, so it's doomed immediately. Mm-hmm. The Big 12, the Southwest Conference dies. The Big 12 is created. And the SEC comes up with a neat little idea of their commissioner at the time, looks at the NCAA rule book and sees this obscure little rule about 12 teams. That if you have 12 teams, you're allowed to have a conference championship game. And he gets this idea that, well, if we do that, we can go out there and sell that game to the TV network.
Yeah, and the big deal with that game was the last week, and it's similar, almost similar how it is now, but a little bit different. The last game of the year for college football, the regular season, was Army-Navy. there was nothing else going on after week, what is it, 15?
Yeah, right. And it's it was and because they were and because they were first, they like they had that week all to themselves, other than Army Navy.
Yeah,
it's not like today where you have a conference championship weekend and then the next week is Army Navy.
Yeah.
The way it works now is the way it worked then is like, well, this is literally the only weirdos doing this. So,
but yeah. TV was very happy about this
because it was the we can with the extra week,
and it's team Alabama. It's teams people have heard of that might want to watch because you know Army Navy the rivalry kind of picked up in a fun way in like the last this last century feels like this last you know
basically since Paul Johnson.
Yeah, but in the 90s, no one would have watched that, man.
Yeah, it was just two teams running basic NFL offenses with no talent.
Yeah, so there's no gimmicks or fun or anything. So if you're a TV network, you're like, yes, because A, we're gonna kick that game's ass if they go on at the same time.
Right. And
even that day, people are going to want a better game, and we get Alabama. And that's the selling point, I think, for this game is... People have heard of Alabama. They've kind of heard of Auburn because of Bo Jackson. It's a pretty big deal at this point. Still Herschel Walker, legend in people's minds. So, like, there were some stars that kind of put the SEC on the board in the 80s, too. Like, they weren't as middling as they were before that, correct, Dan? Like, well, in the 80s, they had some breakout guys.
Well, you had – it was basically running back – you know, like, it was the conference of running backs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you had Herschel Walker who went on to become very famous. You had Bo Jackson, you had Emmitt Smith.
Yeah.
You know, you had some like the future Hall of Fame running backs. No quarterbacks though.
Yeah.
The SEC, not a great history with quarterbacks.
But ironically though, one of their former quarterbacks is probably what leads them to stardom.
Exactly.
92, we get Steve Spurrier's Florida Gators versus the Alabama Crimson Tide in Birmingham, Alabama. For the first SEC championship game.
Yeah.
So, Dan, why was this game in Birmingham, not Atlanta?
Because back then the conference was basically run out of at the behest of the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
And this is also before the Georgia Dome got built.
Yeah.
So the Georgia Dome's not built yet. You know, the Georgia Dome, like the Falcons are still playing at Fulton County Stadium.
Yeah.
And so I believe they were playing at least. I think the move was probably to always move to the Georgia Dome. But the you know they played the first 2 years at Legion Field.
Yeah, but that was a big. I feel like putting it there like appeased Alabama because Alabama probably had to agree to wanting this to happen.
So
correct?
Yeah,
there's a lot of politics.
So there was a. I mean, Roy Kramer is the father of the modern SEC as we know, the 12-team league. They expanded. They added Arkansas, which as we mentioned before was always looking for a way out of the Southwest Conference as soon as that NCAA ruling came down, and then they wanted Florida State. And Florida State turned them down and joined the ACC instead. And they ended up with South Carolina, who nobody was really all that excited about. So from the get-go on expansion, you've got people bitching that this is stupid. We just added, you know, yeah, Arkansas might be something. Because Arkansas had won a national championship before.
Yeah.
But we just added like, this terrible South Carolina.
Recruiting, you get a reach into Texas kind of with Arkansas being there. So it was nice.
But, like, with South Carolina, everybody's like, oh, my God, we just added, like, a mid-major, basically. This is an embarrassment.
It's like the equivalent of adding, like, who today, like a...
It would be like if the SEC added Memphis.
Yeah.
Or, like, somebody at that level where it's like...
With less success than Memphis has had recently.
Yeah, like, what if Memphis... Like, South Carolina wasn't even doing well. Like, South Carolina had been very good in the mid-80s, and then their head coach literally died of a heart attack. On a coke bender,
right before
he was about to get hit with NCAA violations.
It's not the same, but it's like if in 10 years the SEC was like, Georgia State, come on down.
Or like, yeah, Southern Miss, we want you. So, you know, there was already doubters. And then the biggest contention that everybody complained about when this deal was going through was, one, it meant you were going to add an extra game to the conference season. The SEC had always been a 7-game schedule. So now they're going to be a 12-game or an 8-game schedule.
Yeah.
Well, that means a bunch of rivalries were getting screwed up. Like, the Florida-Miami game basically went away. The Georgia-Clemson series went away.
Yeah.
Auburn-Clemson went away. Because
Auburn-Tech.
Auburn-Georgia-Tech, yeah. So you had a number of, like, cross-conference rivalry games that suddenly were going to go away because, well, we can't, you know, we can't play that, you know, we still want our gimme game.
The beauty of the SEC, though, it doesn't take that long for the fan base to go, oh, I don't like that guy either, though. So,
well, that was the brilliant thing. That was the brilliant thing about the SEC is that the SEC, because they'd always had this weird, the SEC had always had this very strange scheduling setup where conferences, like, you could pick your conference opponents.
Yeah.
Like, so you would sign deals with teams in your conference to play them. It wasn't like the league decided, okay, it's time for Alabama to play Florida. Or it's time for Alabama to play
Alabama's got to stop playing Vandy every year.
Like, Alabama would just decide who they wanted to play that year. And so you'd go decades sometimes where teams in the conference wouldn't play each other. Like, Florida and Tennessee, before the conference expanded, had played each other like 15 times in 50 years.
Yeah, which it's wild because as we kind of get into when, you know, the 90s and everything, Florida-Tennessee was the big draw in the SEC outside of the conference game.
Because suddenly some of these conference teams who barely saw themselves as having anything to do with each other are now playing each other every year, and that leads to more contact and more of a feel. Like, instead of Alabama or instead of Georgia caring about beating Clemson, they're caring about, well, God, we got to beat Tennessee. Like, fuck Tennessee.
Yeah. Fuck them, yeah. Think about now, even. LSU and A&M don't like each other. Really quick.
That did not take long.
Yeah, within a decade, they were, like, having fights after the game. Don't like each other that much. Like, that's pretty impressive. Really easy, and that goes to some of the issues the SEC would have even here. A lot of these schools don't like each other and are willing to snitch on each other.
Yes. That is a long-term issue in the SEC. And that had been a long-term issue in a lot of conferences. Like that's part of one of the other things that killed the Southwest Conference is that basically everybody in Texas was constantly ratting on everybody else.
Yeah.
So the whole league was on probation.
And as we kind of get into this later on, it would hurt the SEC's biggest draw, essentially.
Exactly. But
about the time the problem got.
Yes, but setting the table, everybody in the SEC, all the coaches were sitting there terrified that this extra game was going to kill their ability to compete nationally for championships, especially Alabama, because they were the team that had competed the most often for national championships.
Yeah,
and so in year one, Alabama, the longtime bell cow of the conference, plays Florida, who at that point, Steve Spurrier had been at Florida. This was his third season at the University of Florida. Yeah. His first year, they were not eligible due to NCAA penalties before he got there to win the conference, but they had the best record in the conference.
Yeah.
The second year, they won the league. So we're going into year three, and this is now like the two-time defending best team in the league.
Yeah, and let's just go back here in case, like, you're younger, maybe you don't remember, need a refresher. Steve Spurrier was, like, the fucking, what do you even describe him? Like,
the greatest quarterback. And then he was the greatest quarterback in the history of the conference. Then he left, became a failed pro player, went into coaching, and then came back to his alma mater after being the first coach to have a winning season at Duke in, like, 30 years.
And this is a guy who comes to his hometown and pisses on the parade, man. This is a guy who doesn't care about structures. He doesn't care about being polite. He don't care that we're not supposed to beat you by 50. He just comes and kicks ass because he's got a big chip on his shoulder throughout his whole career. You see it when he tries to blow out Georgia and how much he hates Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, basically we're talking about a guy who was the best quarterback in SEC history. And yet, even though he was a far better player than Archie Manning was the guy that everybody talked about because Archie was the guy good who, Southern boy.
Yeah. So this is the kind of the first different kind of SEC kind of coach. Not really the same as we'll get into later, which turned this conference into a big thing. This is the first coach to come in and piss on these traditions. And not care who you made mad while he did it. He'd call your school dumb, beat you by 50, and not give a fuck.
Yeah, he comes in and he's basically just like rude. He's basically like just Rodney Dangerfield from Caddyshack. Like, he just does not give a shit about your country club atmosphere.
Yeah.
He'll just, like, play golf and beat you, and then go on and play your football team and beat them by 40.
Yeah,
and he's got And he's got a different offense. He's running basically a hybrid of the run and shoot and then a pro-style offense where they would go under, like, they were under center all the time, but they would spread the field with 4 and 5 wide receivers and then come into an I formation when they needed to run the ball. But yeah, they would spread the field, and SEC teams had no idea what they were looking at or how to stop it.
Yeah. So.
And he basically had an offense that did not know how to slow down. Like, he could not stop scoring points. So you've got the new kid on the block that's won the league 2 years in a row versus.
And is pissing on tradition. I really want to iterate this point. It's pissing on the tradition of the South, which is like a big deal down here. You're not from the South, like, you don't kind of get, like, especially in those days, you weren't really supposed to rock the boat like Spurrier did.
And doing it at a school that never had been successful in the SEC. Florida had never won the conference before Steve Spurrier got there. They had 0 conference championships. They had never won 10 games before Steve Spurrier.
Yeah. So, but Bama comes into this game, number 2.
They're the underdog to Florida to a lot of people because Florida's, again, the 2-time defending conference champion.
But they win, which is great for the
SEC. They win in the first SEC championship game is an incredibly exciting game that Alabama wins on a pick 6 with like 2 minutes left in the game. Yeah.
And does a 9.8 TV rating. So essentially, I think that's almost 10% of all televisions in America at that time.
Watch that.
Turned off.
Yeah. Yeah. And the SEC, for the first time ever, has a ton of eyeballs watching an SEC versus SEC team.
Yeah.
It wasn't Alabama playing Alabama. It's not Alabama playing in the Cotton Bowl or Alabama in the Sugar Bowl playing Notre Dame. And it's like, well, yeah, okay. We'll watch Alabama play a big school. It is an SEC versus SEC game that the whole country is watching.
No, and the school that maybe some people didn't even know existed, like, Alabama kind of needed a miracle almost to beat them. So right away, even though Florida lost, they almost kind of went over to do like a little bit of wrestling speak here.
Yeah, the whole country got to see them. Because their first 2 years winning the league, nobody, if you didn't watch TBS every week, you did not see a lot of Florida games.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big coming out party for Florida. They come up short. But then Alabama goes on to play in the Bowl Alliance National Championship game against Miami, and Miami is the top dog college program at the time. Miami was considered like the juggernaut of all juggernauts. I believe they're the defending national champion that year. And
no,
that wasn't the year after the Dwayne Johnson win.
Was that not the Colorado Georgia Tech year?
That was 2 years before that.
Oh, okay, excuse me.
Yeah, I believe Miami won the national title in 91.
Okay.
That's the Rocks national championship.
Okay.
So Miami's trying to repeat, and they're going head to head with Alabama, and Alabama beats them. So not only did playing in this conference championship, it didn't keep them from being successful at all.
And Dan beats Miami 34-13, so you're like, well, damn, Florida could probably beat Alabama if they played again. That's what you're thinking, right?
Yeah.
And how much, you know, they're probably better than Miami. It's probably what a lot of people took away from this.
Which then means, subsequently, the SEC gets all of this extra heat on them because it's like, well, damn, that game was a pretty important game. Like, that thing basically was decided who got to play in the national championship game. Yeah. And obviously it mattered. And, you start to plant that seed that maybe playing in this big game help get them ready for it.
Yeah.
You know, because at this point, Miami has joined the Big East, and they're playing, like, Rutgers and, you know, Pitt and Syracuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe there were people coming out of that game going, Alabama looked more tested. Alabama looked like they had played something. They had had to deal with a bigger adversity before they played in the national championship.
So it immediately
shoots down all of the negative narratives that were around before they, you know, before the SEC championship game. Basically, in year one, Roy Kramer gets made to look like a genius because he said this would all work out. It wouldn't hurt us competitively. And bang, year one, you win the national championship, and the SEC championship game is one of the most watched games of the season. Like, he looks like a genius immediately. And I can't stress that enough, is how important it was that it worked out so well in year one. Like, there was no, like, oh, well, you know, trust us, guys. Next year, everything's going to pan out. Like, the Pac-12, they had some pretty interesting ideas recently under Larry Scott. But when it didn't pan out immediately, now everybody thinks he's a dumbass. And maybe he is and maybe he isn't. But like 6 years ago, everybody thought Larry Scott was a genius. And when things didn't immediately work out like he said it might, you know, everything went to shit on him.
Yeah. So, but Alabama comes in this next year. They like gangbusters early on.
They rematch with Florida. Yeah.
Yeah. They tie with Tennessee, but they kind of, they look good, but they falter down the stretch. They lose to LSU, and they lose their last game to Auburn. They kind of limp in to face Florida this time.
That is the Auburn this team. Time. That's the Auburn team that went undefeated but wasn't eligible, right?
Yes. They also beat the Florida Gators that year.
Yes. Auburn's clearly the best team in the conference, but they're not allowed to play because of NCAA violations.
A story that will kind of fester back later on. Kind of leads to kind of the rise of the SEC kind of thing. But yeah, Florida comes in and kicks Alabama's ass.
Just beats them like a rented mule.
Yeah.
From one end of the stadium to the other.
Yeah. And then, Florida would go into the Sugar Bowl that year and like destroy West Virginia. Like West Virginia, I think, was like 43-7.
Oh, that leaves out another thing. The year before, Florida ended up, I believe, in the Gator Bowl against NC State and completely destroyed them, which was the first of the, of a recurring thing that would happen where the SEC champ, the team that loses the SEC championship goes into a bowl game completely pissed off and annihilates whoever they like. It was the first version of that where Florida just annihilates NC State, comes back the next year, wins it, and then just leaves skid marks where West Virginia used to be.
Yeah. And next year, Florida keeps it going like gangbusters, baby. They just kick everyone's ass all year. They run into Arkansas, SEC championship. But here's like the first kind of interesting tidbit. They run into Nebraska, the SEC.
Nebraska, who at the time were defending national champions. They had beaten Florida State the year before. They'd beaten Miami the year before. They lost to Florida State. They lost to Florida State on a field goal with like 30 seconds left in 93. They beat Miami in 94, and then they play Florida in 95. And it is literally the biggest beatdown in the history of a major college football.
62-24.
Like, that is the game where Tommy Frazier breaks, like, seven tackles on an option run. You know, just annihilates Florida.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, and it leads to Florida changing their defensive coordinator, hiring some guy from the Big 12 who was coaching at Kansas State by the name of Bob Stoops.
Yes.
Who completely remakes Florida's defense, and then they come back in 1996 and win the national championship.
Yep. So they play Alabama, but they face their old enemy Alabama and beat them 45-30.
No.
But this year, was this the year, Dan, that a young freshman, a young horse-faced freshman steps into Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah, 95, I believe, was the first year.
Yeah. And that young man is Peyton Manning.
A man who was already bald as like a freshman in college.
But instantly, Manning versus Spurrier becomes must-see TV.
Right. For college football. Yeah, because you've got, you know, Tennessee was the first team to really humiliate Spurrier. Once he joined the league as a coach. Tennessee, I think in Spurrier's first year, beat them like 50-3. It is the biggest beatdown Spurrier ever got as an SEC coach at Florida. Like, they just got annihilated by Tennessee his first year there. So, Tennessee, from the get-go, seems like the only team to really have any chance at beating Spurrier. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as Florida gets really rolling, Tennessee become like, the Tennessee-Florida game becomes, well, this is going to decide who goes to Atlanta. Like, yeah, this is around this time, is the battle.
Yeah, because I want to take a second there to look at the other teams in the SEC we haven't mentioned. We've mentioned Auburn. We've mentioned, say, you know, Florida. Arkansas, you know, made it to one of these, I think, mistakes in one
year. A major fluke. Arkansas made it one of the flukiest seasons of all time.
But whether it's Georgia's awful at this point.
Yeah, it's Georgia, wild. Georgia made a terrible hire after their Hall of Fame head coach retired, Vince Dooley.
Roy Goff.
They go with Ray Goff.
Ray Goff.
You know what Ray Goff, the two things Ray Goff is famous for?
What's that?
He was the first guy to be given of Zaxby's franchise by the original owners.
Uh-huh.
And he was the guy that Steve Spurrier made a personal mission to drive out of coaching forever. Like, Spurrier said things about Ray Goff that were like the cruelest shit in the history of the world. I think going into the 95 Georgia game, Spurrier made the comment when asked whether they thought they'd be able to beat Georgia that year. Well, they still got that Ray Goff coaching. Yeah, we'll be fine.
Yeah, just looking through some of these.
The lack of respect that Steve Spurrier had for fellow coaches of the profession is an amazing thing. Like, he did not mind saying that Ray Goff is a moron who doesn't deserve to be a coach.
Yeah, he goes to Georgia 95, Dan. They can't play Georgia, Florida. I don't know if the Jacksonville Stadium was ready or being redone or something weird around
the time. Jacksonville Stadium was being redone for the Jaguars.
Yeah.
So they played 2 years on campus.
Puts up the most points ever scored by an opposing team in Sanford Stadium, 52.
Yeah.
And he said that was his goal.
Yeah.
I believe that's the game, famously, where, like, the scoreboard went off. It's, like, that score went down as soon as that clock hit zero.
Spurrier has caused a lot of traditions of teams turning the scoreboard off as soon as they lose. He is responsible. Yeah. He did that. Carolina turns their scoreboard off immediately when they lose a game. Because 1 year, Spurrier at Duke beat Carolina by 30. And he just brought, like, every single parent out on the field. Every single, like, relative. Former players, and they just all took pictures in front of the scoreboard. And after that, UNC started turning the scoreboard off as soon as they lose.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen again.
But you get to see the 96 Florida Gators win the SEC.
They win the SEC. They get a chance to rematch against Florida State, who is their one loss.
They beat them.
They win the national championship in the Sugar Bowl against Florida State. And so the SEC, the SEC now has two national champions in less than 5 years, which, and for the first time, you know, in modern memory, somebody from the SEC won a national championship who wasn't Alabama.
Yeah, and the team that won had the star coach, the old ball coach, the one who, anytime he said something, it was all over this new show called SportsCenter.
Steve Spurrier was the most talked about coach in college football at that time.
Yeah.
Everybody in the, like, even NFL people were constantly speculating about when he would go to the NFL. Colleges, like, he was the scourge of college football because he didn't do things the right way. He was the most talked about figure in college football at this time.
So did 1997 rolls around. Peyton Manning's a senior.
This is supposed to be Peyton's year. He's a senior.
Yeah. Finally going to take down Spurrier.
Florida's clearly rebuilding, and Florida beats him by rotating their quarterbacks all game long.
Beats him by 2 touchdowns.
Does not even have one starting quarterback. He just rotates the quarterbacks every play.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite thing of all time. Yeah.
But Tennessee wouldn't go on to lose another game. They beat Alabama. They spank Georgia.
Yeah, for all the talk about Steve, like Peyton Manning never beat Florida, I don't think he ever lost to Alabama either.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They played number 11 Auburn SEC Championship, beat him by one. They'd roll into the SEC's old friend, Nebraska, and get stomped 42-17.
And basically wins Nebraska, like that's the year Nebraska and Michigan tied for the national championship. Even though Michigan was clearly the better team during the season because they played a way tougher schedule, Nebraska got to play Tennessee, who everybody respected, and they got to play Peyton Manning, who lots of people thought got robbed of the Heisman.
Yeah.
And they beat them to death. Like, yeah. They strangled Peyton Manning on national television.
And Peyton Manning, probably the greatest quarterback in terms of not winning of his era. Like, a pretty big star in college was Peyton.
That goes to tell you how different the league had gotten, where, like, Nebraska won a share of a national championship exclusively because they beat the piss out of Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Like, Peyton Manning was considered...
That's the last year.
Yeah.
If I'm correct. After this, though, people go, we're tired of the split national championship stuff.
This is the last year of the bowl. We'll probably do
another show on this one day. But they go, well, we're going to have a computer picket. And the BCS is born.
The BCS would come into existence for the first time in 1998.
And, of course, that's the year Tennessee gets over the Florida hump. They beat Mississippi State in the NCAA championship. They roll. It was their closest game that year to Arkansas. They went to double overtime. Then they run into Florida State and win the national championship.
So the first year of the SEC championship game, the SEC wins the national championship and has the most watched game of the regular season. The first year of the BCS, the SEC wins the national championship. So you're seeing, like, at every point when you're getting these new situations, clearly the model that Roy Kramer had built is working. You continue to have these proof of concepts where it's like, what we have done has become the way to do things, because look at the success on field. We've got, you know, in the span of like 50 years, one team in the SEC won any national championships. Once they adopted this new model, they've now had three different national championship teams in less than a decade.
Yeah. And all big, like, I think the biggest thing here is, like, all with teams that, like, the media would like. Alabama, they're famous. Spurrier, they've got the guy who gets ratings. Peyton Manning, the next big thing.
The next big thing quarterback. Peyton Manning did not win the national championship. That was Team Martin.
Yeah.
His success.
But that was part of, I think, the rise and why there are eyeballs on this.
Yeah. Tennessee had been elevated nationally by Peyton Manning.
Because of having Peyton Manning. Yes, yeah. 100%. So you come back in, what, 99?
You know. We go back to Florida dominating until Spurrier.
We run into Florida, runs into Alabama the next year, loses. Like, it's blown out in the SEC. That's the last time Florida and Bama would play in the SEC title game for a little bit. Because I believe around this time, Dan, Alabama's rival Tennessee.
Rats on them.
Got snitching. Yeah.
Got Philip Fulmer, snitch, the king of snitches.
Yeah.
Never turn your back on Phil Fulmer. A couple of people made the mistake of turning their back on Phil Fulmer. One of them was Johnny Majors, the former head coach at Tennessee, who had a heart attack and then couldn't be on the sideline for half a season. Phil Fulmer takes over as the interim coach, and pretty soon Johnny Majors ain't the head coach there anymore. Phil Fulmer is.
Yeah.
Alabama turned their back on Tennessee. And he ratted him out to the NCAA, and they almost got the death penalty.
Yeah, this is huge. That's when you go back and look through the record books for this stuff. Most of these games were forfeited by Alabama.
Yeah.
Specifically the ones against Tennessee. That's always kind of weird. Like, sometimes that's the only note you see. But that's a big deal. But the SEC can survive this, though, because we got Spurrier. Tennessee looks like a thing. We're good. But that year, Florida doesn't win the SEC championship. They go in to play Michigan State in their bowl game. Michigan State's led by a young coach named Nick Saban, who has left to go to LSU.
Yeah, Nick Saban.
This is the biggest move in the history of the SEC in the modern era.
Exactly.
Saban going to LSU.
And it's one of the best athletic director moves of all time, because when you talk about LSU, you talk about a program that had, I mean, obviously there's a ton of great talent that's come from the state of Louisiana, but they could never get any of those kids to stay and go to LSU. Louisiana kids always did everything they could to get the hell out of Louisiana. Yeah. It was one of those places where if you grew up like Marshall Faulk went to San Diego State specifically because it was the furthest place from New Orleans. And it was like, I can get out of New Orleans and never have to look back.
Yeah.
They had, I mean, Louisiana's general is like the most good old boy state of all good old boy states, to the point where you can't practice law in any other state if you got your degree in Louisiana, because their law code is so fucked up that, like, if you learn their laws, you can you can't go anywhere else because nowhere else has laws as screwed up as they do.
Yeah.
So it was a program that had always looked for Cajuns. That had always been like, well, we got to get somebody from the Bayou to come over there on Coda. Mm-hmm. And so it had never worked. LSU was like the most underachieving program in college football, especially after Spurrier turned Florida into a powerhouse. And so they just looked out into the college football ecosystem and said, who's winning at a place that's really hard to win at? And Nick Saban had turned Michigan State into an 8-9 win a year team at a time where the Big Ten was easily the toughest conference in college football. He's having to compete with Michigan and Ohio State operating at, you know, almost 100% capacity plus Penn State. And he's winning 8 to 10 games a year. Clearly this guy knows what he's doing, and they hired him, and he came in and said, look, no boosters are going to have any power at this program. Everybody's going to have to work for me. Nobody's allowed to have anything to do with this program unless they come through me. And LSU and their boosters, who are obviously colorful people, were so desperate to be more successful because, look, they played Alabama every year now because LSU and Alabama were in the same division.
Yeah.
And their cross-division rival was Florida. So every year, Florida's beating them like a rented mule, and then they're turning around and losing to Alabama, too. They were just getting destroyed. And so, you know, when Nick Saban says, look, this is what you're going to have to do if you want to hire me, and this is what you're going to have to do to be successful, LSU felt like, we don't have anything to lose. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And they went whole hog on the Nick Saban thing, and within, you know, a couple of years, after hiring him, they're playing for a national championship.
Yeah, but also in a couple of years, they're in the SEC title game and beating Tennessee.
So there's like this immediate proof of comp.
2001, let's talk about 2000 really quick. Spurrier comes back, dominates all year, more or less. They lose to Mississippi State randomly. They lose to Florida State. They kill Auburn in the championship game, then lose to number 2 Miami. And then
after they got into a fight with the Miami players on Bourbon Street and got their asses kicked.
Spurrier says, I'm done. Right?
I think you got your year mixed up. Because their last year...
Was that 2001?
Yeah, the last year was 2001. They have a chance to play for a national championship, and then they lose to Tennessee in a game that got moved due to 9/11.
That's right.
And they end up in the Orange Bowl against Maryland and beat Maryland out of existence.
And something for next time that we'll discuss, they lose for the first time in a while to Georgia, who just hired some weird guy from FSU.
Yeah, some Christian some Bible thumper from Florida State. Yeah,
but all of a sudden, they're beating Florida again within, a year or two? I think that might have been his first year.
Yeah, it would have been his second year. His first year was... It was his first year, because 2000 he coached in the bowl game for Florida State. He coached in the national championship game, even though he'd already taken the Georgia job, and they got killed. And for a few years, the conventional wisdom was Florida State should have let him go ahead and leave because he couldn't do both things at once.
Yeah. And that's looking back at this, big year for Florida also beats Notre Dame that year.
Well, that's not that impressive.
Yeah, that's what Bob Davey.
That's Bob Davey Notre Dame.
Hell yeah.
That's Women Have No Rights in the era of Notre Dame.
Which is not that different than this era.
Sure.
But then Florida gets the SEC championship game. I'm sorry, Tennessee gets the SEC championship game, looking like gangbusters. They beat Notre Dame that year, excuse me. And they lose. LSU.
Huh.
Saban guy.
Some new guy. He's come into the league and doesn't even know anything. Like, Steve Spurrier's deal was that he was one of them, but he was a class traitor. Like,
yeah.
He grew up in their, he is the FDR of the SEC, where he knew all of their ways. He knew all the ways you're supposed to act at the country club and then just ignored them. Nick Saban is like full on carpetbagger interloper. Like, you ain't from around here, boy. You're from West Virginia. Ain't even South. You know. And
he never coached in the South.
He had his whole career had been in the Midwest and the NFL. Yeah. I mean, I guess he was with the Houston Oilers. That's kind of South. I guess Houston is the most southern city in Texas.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the NFL, which is basically like, whether you're any NFL team is not really in any place. It's just in the NFL.
So, but that's kind of where we'll cut off this. The Saban guy wins, Spurrier leaves, and it feels like the whole SEC as a whole kind of changing. Because Bama's locked away. The best coach in the league has just left.
The best program, the traditional top program in the conference, has immolated due to NCAA violations. The best team of the last generation is now in uncertainty because their coach is gone. Tennessee, I guess, is your top dog.
And they just lost to this LSU thing.
And they just lost to LSU.
A team that lost three games this year.
And, you know, Georgia looks like they're finally getting their stuff together. Auburn, we did leave out Auburn hired Ole Miss's coach.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is starting to look like something under some guy named Tommy Tuberville, who's a former Miami Hurricanes defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And Auburn, who are so desperate to be good again that they just steal their coach from them.
Yeah, and it works.
And it absolutely works.
They didn't win a ton of these SEC titles. They'll win one later. But they were in it most of the year, and they looked through the rankings, usually a top 25 team. Pretty good. So
yeah, and all it took was they had to just pull Tommy out of that pine box that he was stuck in.
And but the best part is they stole it from like the douchiest school in the SEC, which is Ole Miss.
The school absolutely nobody has any respect for.
The least likable. Yeah. So but yeah, as we at this point, we're in a weird era. We've got computers picking things. We've got guys leaving.
We've got
the greatest team in the history of the conference is more or less dead and buried.
I mean,
there's a heartbeat, but we're putting dirt on him.
The NCAA violations that Alabama gets hit with. Mike DuBois is the coach when they get the NCAA violations. He gets fired as a result. They hire Dennis Franchione, who had been very successful at TCU. What people didn't realize is that the reason why they were successful is this defensive coordinator he had on staff named Gary Patterson, who takes over after he leaves for Alabama.
Yeah.
And TCU just keeps on getting better and better. Yeah, while Dennis Franchione never really accomplishes anything without him. Funny that. But they hired Dennis Franchione. Once they get the NCAA penalties, he leaves Alabama to go coach at Texas A&M. Alabama lost a coach to Texas A&M because that's how bad their situation was.
Yeah. And then what, the next guy, was Franchione the stripper guy, or was that the next guy?
No, Franchione was the guy who left them.
Okay. Who was the stripper guy?
The stripper guy was Mike Price, who had been Ryan Leaf's coach at Washington State. And because he was a Yankee, Alabama fans were already wanting to get rid of him, like boosters did. Like, he could have been their Nick Saban before they got Nick Saban.
Yeah.
But they weren't ready to hire a Yankee. And so he got run off for going to a strip club when I guarantee you every coach Alabama's ever had has made similar trips.
So yeah, a weird era.
But notice in the national championship kind of thing, SEC's not really dominating yet.
No, but compared to what they were as a conference, they are immediately far higher up on the totem pole than they used to be. The SEC is now like, oh, we have to, like, the SEC went from being where the only conference below, above them, that they were above was the ACC, to now, you know, you're looking at the SEC and you're going, well, they're ahead of the Pac-10. They're the, you know, they're right there neck and neck with the Big 12 and the Big 10.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, if you're an NFL team, you're like, well, this is where the guys are. It's like a big part of it.
Yeah.
So next week we're going to look at part two. That's kind of the rise of Nick Saban. Him leaving, but like kind of what that hire did to transform things. The guy who replaces the guy that replaces Spurrier wasn't from the SEC either. Hell, he's not even from the Midwest.
It's the rise of the carpetbaggers on next week's episode.
Yeah. So we're going to take a hard look at that. We're going to look at a SEC team that got screwed over, that went undefeated, didn't get to go to the national championship, something that we couldn't fathom today.
I mean, we have a hard time even understanding how an SEC champion that had one loss could miss the, I mean, that's unfathomable. You know, that if they just had one loss, they wouldn't be in playing for a national championship.
Yeah. So we'll take a look at that. Kind of like the SEC didn't start to dominate the BCS era right away. We're going to kind of look at those 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Next week. And like what kind of had to happen. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the aftermath from the Fulmer thing. And like everyone kind of realizing, let's get into this together for the money. Because around this time, they signed the big CBS deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were on TBS previously, right?
Well, they were on TBS in the bad old days.
Okay.
And then their conference championship games are on ESPN. They're on ABC.
ABC, yeah.
And then they signed the CBS deal a few years in.
Which is what changes a lot of things in terms of money.
Yeah, and exposure.
Yeah.
Especially because they end up on CBS around the time CBS loses the NFL. Yeah. So the SEC...
No. CBS never lost the NFL.
Yeah, they did.
NBC did.
CBS originally lost it. The CBS used to be the home of the NFC. And then they lost all... Like, CBS doesn't just lose the NFL. They lose, like, half of their affiliates become Fox affiliates overnight. Yeah. So they can keep doing NFL games.
Yeah. And then... But then they stumble. They stumble into Survivor. They stumble into the SEC football on Saturdays. They get the AFC football. And by God, they're America's number one network halfway through the decade.
Yeah. They stole the AFC from NBC to get back on to having NFL football.
Yeah. Which in turn kind of sets up Notre Dame never having to join a conference. So a lot of this era we're going to talk about next week, we're going to revisit a lot, I think, over the next couple of months. Because this was a big, like this is where all the ingredients for the stew that we're eating now for college football started around 2002, 2003, that kind of era.
Yeah.
So,
but you got to know where you were coming from before you know where they were going.
Yeah. And that's where we are. So next week we're going to get really into it, and get a little more depth for the whole conference, I think, over the last, 15 years ago or so?
Yeah.
So. Should be fun. So that's it for me. Any housekeeping notes or anything before we get out of here?
Just thank you for your continued support in the new year.
Yeah, thank you.
And on that note, we love you, love you, love you, and play the music, Jason.